Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies are...
Armand Warman.
And Caroline Sita.
So we have two guests today for this bonus episode, which is actually going to be focusing on the Marvel and Netflix show Luke Cage Season 1. It's going to be a spoiler-filled discussion from the start. So take note of that if you haven't watched all of the episodes yet. Two special guests, Amon and Caroline. And Caroline, you have become our Netflix expert. So you are kind of here every time we discuss these shows.
It's true. It's a good gig.
Yeah, and as well, we'll repeat this every time you're on. But if people want to read your reviews of this show and of the other Netflix shows, they should head to the AV Club, where you do the binge watch reviews.
Yep, and almost kill myself every time, but especially this time. I review all 13 episodes in a weekend, and it gets a little difficult by the end.
Yeah, I normally get through these shows pretty quick. It took me until basically now. That's why this episode's only just turning up now, because I didn't get around to watching them until the last week or so. But I'm on. James obviously watched all these episodes because he went and did the interviews with Den of Geek, which he kindly shared on the podcast as well. But he said he was basically Luke Caged out. And hey, look, Amon's been talking about this show an awful lot. Why don't we get him on? So it's great that we've got you here to discuss this show as well. And I guess it's a good place to start would be asking you particularly what you've thought of this show, how many of the boxes it ticked for you, and I guess probably where it ranks for you amongst the Netflix Marvel Universe right now.
Yeah, no, I was really, really, really excited for Luke Cage for a number of reasons. The introduction that he gave to the character in Jessica Jones, I thought was great. I was sold after that bar fight scene in episode 2, I believe, of Jessica Jones. And so, in addition to that, and then hearing that Chiyo Hodari Koko was going to be the showrunner, and then the cast, which was predominantly black, which, you know, it's a rare thing for a Marvel product, or really any product which has this many eyes on it. So all that going into the show, and then also the trailers as well, which I thought were great, I was very excited for. And I think overall, it's a really good series. The title character, I think, has done very well. I think probably the best thing about it is the show's female characters. There's three female characters who are really, really well drawn and really, really well acted. It's a little frustrating that, because I really wanted to love it, and I can't quite say that I do. I think the first sort of 6-7 episodes are really, really, really great. For me, it falls off quite a bit in the latter half, and that's because of the introduction of Diamondback. I don't think it's handled very well. I've seen some of your tweets to that, and I'm sure we're gonna come to it. I think it's, in some ways, it's a tale of two halves. As I say, the first 7 episodes are great. The latter half isn't as good at all as the early half. But I still think overall it's really, really great. And there's lots of things which it does very well. The music, the acting, the feel for Harlem, which I think, you get more of a feel for Harlem than you do for Hell's Kitchen, at least, from my perspective. And I think, you know, that is a major strength of the show as well. And I'm sure we'll get into, sort of the minutiae of things that it doesn't do well, as well as things which it does really impressively. But as I say, overall, I think I really enjoyed it.
Caroline, are you as enthusiastic as someone?
Yeah, I'm actually in pretty much exactly the same boat. I had super high expectations going in. I thought that early trailer they released was super great. The cast is incredible. And I think because my expectations were so high, overall, I really liked it, but it is hard not to focus on sort of the negatives, especially because they come in the second half of the season. So it's sort of like what you're remembering. But I actually think it's pretty similar to both Daredevil and Jessica Jones in that it starts out really strong and sort of tapers out by the end. But overall, my experience of it was very positive, and I think the things that I liked overall sort of outweighed the things that I didn't like about it.
Oh, now I'm going to be the grumpy one.
When are you not the grumpy one, Joe?
Well, on the episodes that we just, on our Doctor Strange episode, that listeners will have heard, so I would have at least got to be the positive one there. I can't disagree with a lot of the stuff that you're talking about in terms of the individual elements. Stuff like, its sense of place in Harlem, the music, and the kind of the tone that music creates. I liked a lot of the characters. I thought Mike Colter's Luke Cage is great. Simone Missick's Misty Knight. Mahershala Ali's Cottonmouth, big fan. And there's lots of individual elements of the show that I like. It just doesn't feel like it comes together ultimately. And I thought the pacing was a problem the whole way through. I thought the first two or three episodes, while there was a lot of stuff in there that I liked, it felt like a tough show to get through. And while I could kind of enjoy an individual scene, I would find my attention kind of waning across the course of an episode. And then just some kind of simple stuff like the internal logic of the show. Like, I didn't always believe where the characters were supposed to, where the show was telling me characters were emotionally, I didn't always believe. And I thought, given that one of the characters is a police officer, the way that it shows the police in action is laughable in its believability. Like something like Misty Knight saying to her boss, "I just got shot in the arm by that guy." She's like, "We haven't got time to discuss this right now, Misty." "But I'm a cop, and I'm telling you that guy shot." No, we have to focus on Luke Cage right now. Okay. I think it suffers from a lot of the problems that the other Marvel shows do as well. And yes, the big issue is Diamondback being the villain in the second half, because just at the point at which you think, oh, Cottonmouth is getting really interesting, and it's kind of interesting to view him through the lens of a kingpin-type figure, but one who is even faster losing a grip on his empire than Kingpin did, and how is he going to fight back, and what masterstroke is he going to pull to keep a hold on it? He's gone. And Caroline, I was reading your AV Club review of that particular episode, and you were like, oh, and what's really smart here is that they've obviously switched up who the main villain is, and now we're going to find out that Alfred Woodard's character is the main villain instead, Mariah. And yeah, I think ultimately that's where the show leads, but it kind of needed to happen then. Like, it felt like, oh yes, she is the main villain, except then we have to wait another, well, until the next season comes around, I guess, because we have to spend 6 or 7 episodes with Diamondback, who is just the worst. The worst.
He's bad, and he's not great on a performance level. And I also think it just gets really sort of thematically murky, too, because you have the first half of the season is sort of like looking at Harlem as a whole, and like here's the criminal element and here's the communal element and here's how Luke Cage sort of fits into it all, and you know, here's Mariah trying to reform the city one way and here's Cottonmouth trying to do it the other way. And then all of a sudden with Diamondback, it becomes this like origin story for Luke Cage, not even like his powers, but sort of his family life and his past. And that it's just this massive coincidence that somehow Diamondback is sort of involved with the criminal element and also Luke Cage's half brother. It just got really messy, and it sort of felt like I didn't need to be exploring Luke Cage's family. Maybe that's something for another season, but it had such a strong thematic through line in the first half, and then that all sort of just like went away because it sort of half was still about that, but half was about his family. And yeah, it was just a mess.
He goes into the church and kind of remembers and then goes, oh yeah, he is my brother.
Yeah, that was so strange.
It's very strange.
The entire subplot is just done far too quickly. And it's annoying because I feel like if you had done like a slow build to that reveal, it could have really been powerful and effective. But
if it had been bedded into the first half of the season at all.
Exactly. But
then the family stuff seems interesting with Mariah and Cottonmouth in the first half. And actually, I really liked, I kind of wanted it to be maybe a little bit less simplistic than a one episode flashback to those two characters as kids. But I still found that dynamic of Mariah and Cottonmouth and how that had shaped the people they'd become kind of interesting. And it's and then instead in the second half, we're looking at Luke Cage's family, which seems like it's been plucked out of thin air and doesn't seem as thematically relevant as these two kind of characters who have been in Harlem all their life. It's these two outsiders.
Yeah,
and it didn't hugely work for me. I said that Diamondback might be worse than Enchantress in terms of comic book villains.
I saw that, and I was just like, no.
Yeah,
no.
I don't think so. Because Diamondback did not dance. Yeah. That alone elevates him.
Yeah, I suppose. He did spout a lot of one-liners, though, and he did seem to be fundamentally terrible at killing Luke Cage. I have a big problem with the Judas bullet, by the way. There is a scene midway through this season where Mariah is talking to Cottonmouth, and he's saying, well, we can't kill him. His skin is bulletproof. She says, well, have you tried drowning him? Have you tried poisoning him? What about all these other things? And I'm like, oh, that could be interesting to do something rather than just firing a bazooka at a building in the middle of Harlem and then carrying on like that's just a thing that happens. So I was like, okay, that might be an interesting way. And then it's like, nope, Judas bullet. And so, I don't know, I found it really disappointing that this guy with bulletproof skin, it's just, oh, we came up with a better bullet.
Yeah.
I think the show sort of sets up so many interesting things. So it sets up, oh, Mariah, she's sort of, you know, Cottonmouth, he's like the hyper-masculine guy, so he just wants to use weapons, but she's sort of like cunning in a different way, so she's going to, you know, use poison or something. So that's an interesting idea. And then you have, like you said, the flashbacks to Mariah and Cottonmouth's childhood. Oh, that's really interesting. Or like the relationship in flashback between Reva and Luke. Oh, that's interesting. But then it never goes back to any of those. It sort of just like keeps dropping them. So it's weird because while I'm watching it, I found all those very engaging, because you sort of don't know what's coming. But then when you look back on the season, you sort of realize how many things they left hanging.
Yeah. Now, I sort of get what you're saying, Joe, when it comes to the Judas bullet. I'm not sure how soon after Cottonmouth talks to Mariah and Mariah says, suggests all those things to the time when he learns about the Judas bullet. And I sort of get sort of learning about the Judas bullet. As soon as he finds out about that, you want to try it out on Luke Cage. That's fine. But why bring up, why have that Mariah scene in there if you're not going to do anything with it? It did feel weird.
Yeah. I think I just didn't need that to be part of the show regardless. And the fact that then spins off from them going back to Georgia for some more origin story stuff. And now, I really liked the origin story episode. I think it's episode 4, isn't it?
Where correct. We
flash back to Seagate Prison. And I liked that. I thought it was a nice change of pace at that point in the season. I thought that was the kind of stuff that I wanted to know about Luke Cage. Like, what kind of person was he before? How did he meet Reva? And I really liked that that character and that thread from Luke Cage, from Jessica Jones, was transplanted into Luke Cage. And that's the stuff that I wanted to know about him. And I also wanted to know more about his kind of, like, his past, like, in law enforcement as well. What I didn't particularly need later in the season was to dig into the kind of the pseudoscience of how his body worked, and because it was just like, he's a bulletproof guy. That's all I need right now. And it felt like kind of a little bit like all of the stuff with Nuke at the back end of Jessica Jones, kind of like stuff that was a little bit superfluous to the actual story the show is telling, but was like leaving the door open to do more silly comic book stuff down the road. And we get that here, don't we, with Diamond back in the hospital at the end.
Yeah.
And oh god, I did not need a hint that their character might come back.
Can I just say we can't mention the origin episode without talking about Luke Cage's hair.
Oh yes.
My goodness. It's beautiful. So awesome.
Certainly a lot.
he's really good in that episode as well, like showing a different version of that character. Because it's a very laid-back performance from Luke Cage. And also there was that article from Luke Cage, from Mike Coulter. I saw that article that was going around the internet about how surprising it was that for the first black superhero, he's such a kind of like a conservative hero. And that he isn't kind of like all action. He isn't wanting to throw himself into every situation blindly. He's kind of sitting back and letting things happen to him a lot of the time. And I thought that, Mike Coulter's really good at playing those different shades of that character, but also able to switch into that all action mode when he needs to. And just physically, he's a fantastic specimen, isn't he? You absolutely believe that guy could be bulletproof.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I spent the majority of the time just like, I just really want him to hug me. Like, not even in like a romantic or sexual way. I just feel like getting a hug from Mike Coulter would be so like comforting, because he could just really wrap around you.
Now he's really good at sort of playing that side of the character, but I got to say, at a certain point, the constant flip-flopping of Luke Cage did begin to bother me. Like, I get that sort of, you know, you start off the journey as reluctant, and, you know, it works for the origin story, it works for the early few episodes. But there's, like, in episode 10, I think he's still having doubts about, well, why should it be me to sort of go and do and be a hero? And at that point in the series, you know, it felt like,
he'd embraced it.
He'd accepted sort of, you know, the hero responsibility a few episodes back. So for him to sort of go back to that, you know, at that point in the series, it did bother me a little bit.
What do you guys think? I thought there was that kind of reminds me of a few of the other problems that the show has, because it feels to me like it was constantly flip-flopping as well in terms of, what the public thought about Luke Cage, and suddenly, you know, the way that Mariah was supposed to be manipulating things through the press, or the way that Diamondback was doing stuff to make Luke Cage look bad, or the police look bad, or vice versa. And at one point, there was a point in the episode where the cop has beaten up the kid, where Mariah is turning everyone against the cops, and that's supposed to be in a way as well turning people against Luke Cage. But I thought we were turning people against Luke Cage because he'd thrown a cop through a windscreen, and I couldn't work out what the show was doing at a bunch of times with that. And for, I mean that felt to me, certainly in terms of the kind of the political relevance of a show like Luke Cage, you know, in a year where the Black Lives Matter movement is happening, and where the show at times seemed to be leaning into stuff like that with, especially at the end in my favourite thing about the series, which, Amon, I'm sure you're going to talk about, with Method Man and the bullet hole hoodies.
I might mention it.
Some of this, I kind of wanted it to lean into that iconography, and it didn't. And sometimes it's saying it was saying stuff like out loud and making it very on the nose. But then other times getting really confused in its message. So that was frustrating to me, and I kind of wanted the whole show to be stuff like Method Man singing a song about or rapping about Luke Cage that then becomes like something that the people on the streets of Harlem take up. And I would have liked that to have translated into something a little bit more powerful than some people gathering on the street and going, "Go on, Luke, go on."
it's interesting in with Luke Cage, because I think it's throughout the whole show, it's quite heavy-handed. It gets super heavy-handed in the final episodes. But, you know, there's a lot of times where it's being heavy-handed, and it really worked for me. Like the bit in episode 5, which is by far my favorite episode of the series. I think that's when it peaked for me. And that's when the episode ends with Pop's funeral, and he's doing and he's doing this big speech. That's heavy-handed, but it really landed for me. The Method Man bit, heavy-handed, but man, did it land for me. Even the final episode of the season where he's doing that speech to the cops at the end, very heavy-handed, but it really landed for me. It's just, I think it's more the stuff with the villain, and also, you know, that big fight between Diamondback and him at the end was really, it did make me cringe quite a bit. When people start Luke is just very cringeworthy. Oh my gosh. I think it's more with the villain, that the corniness and the very sort of, you know, it goes from, you know, show don't tell to telling not showing in very very quickly in a very big way. And I think that was a fault of the series, especially in the final few episodes. It really took that to the nth degree.
Yeah, I think for the most part, the show did a good job of sort of using certain bits of iconography and certain heightened things, like intentionally heightened things, really well. Like, I think just the image of having Luke Cage in the hoodie is really powerful, even before you get into the Method Man stuff. But I do agree with you, Joe, that the specific, like, subplot, it's really only in one episode, but you have Mariah sort of riling up the community in a sort of, I think what she's trying to say is, like, we need to focus on arming the police in order to stop Luke Cage and other superheroes, and the protests sort of used Black Lives Matter iconography, which is confusing because Black Lives Matter is so specifically about disarming the police. So I thought that one particular subplot was really messy and slightly unfortunate, but I think as a whole, I like the way the series tackled that stuff. And I also think I think you're right in that there are a lot of different reactions to Luke Cage in the city, but I think for me, at least, the show did a good job of saying, like, the city as a whole and the police department as a whole is a little unsure of what to do with Luke, but he is very much Harlem's hero, so the locals really support him. It actually reminded me a lot of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, where you sort of have, like, you know, he's New York's hero and they're rallying around him, even if other people aren't so sure what to make of him. So I didn't even mind, like, the people chanting Luke at the end. That sort of, like, got me. I didn't mind that so much, even though it's so on the nose. But I also really liked the scene where you have the one cop, it's towards the end and Luke's on the run, and you have one cop that stops him, and then he ends up letting him go, and he's like, there are people that are on your side. I thought that was a great moment of, like, There is a mixed reaction to Luke, but particularly the people that understand Harlem and sort of know him and know Pops, like, they're on his side. So I sort of like when the show dug into those complications.
Yeah.
I think my problem with the show, and this is, in a way, I think it made me look back at previous Marvel shows and kind of see a lot of the joins there as well, though. It's that there are scenes like that occasionally that I'm like, I really enjoy, but it almost feels at times like these Marvel shows are being specifically designed for you to watch them while you're doing something else.
Yeah.
Because you'll get a scene like that, but then you feel like you have to wade through another 10 or 15 minutes of character beats that you already know, or kind of just sitting around and characters talking about stuff that relates to what's going on, but it doesn't really drive anything forward. And I think why that's particularly shown up in the second half of the show is And I think this might apply to a lot of Marvel shows, but I think Luke Cage the most, in that all they have lots of really good characters in there that you like, but not so many great character relationships. And so in the back half, if you don't invest in Luke and Diamondback in the way that the show wants you to do, which I think has been a problem for it, even people who like the show more, I mean, Luke is pretty disconnected from Misty. At that point, Misty doesn't really feel like that she is tied to another character in the show. It feels like she's a strong character, but she's being bounced around among the other characters. And there's no real... As I got towards the end of the show, and I wasn't... I like Rosario Dawson, I like Claire Temple. I wasn't hugely invested in the in that relationship. Certainly not compared to the way I was between Luke and Jessica in Jessica Jones. So I really felt that towards the end of the series I was watching characters that I liked but not particularly interested in any of the major interactions. And I feel like I could have been if, I don't know, if Cottonmouth would have been kept around. That was the thing, Cottonmouth and Mariah in the first half, Luke and Cottonmouth, Luke having more to do with Misty, Misty having Scarf to bounce off of. And in the second half, it all feels a little bit loose and disconnected, and like there isn't really a driving force in terms of those relationships.
The second half is in some ways, I like what they're trying to do. In some ways, it's just really poorly written. Like they had, I always come back to the bit where Diamondback, he kills a cop, and then he just starts yelling, "I'm Luke Cage," while in the hoodie. And I'm just like,
that was maybe the funniest thing that I've ever seen. The way that actor played it, too. "I'm Luke Cage!" It was so unintentionally hilarious to me.
It's like, who thought that was a good idea? And then, even though I think, by the way, Simone Missick is really, really great as Misty Knight, and I hope she gets a lot more work after this. I'm sure she will, because she's fantastic. But there's a episode, I can't remember what episode it is, but she's stuck in an interrogation room for the entire episode. And it feels like it belongs on a Misty Knight solo show. It feels like a pilot for a Misty Knight. It doesn't feel, it's not driving anything. It's very interesting looking to the mindset of Misty, but that's not really doing anything. I agree with you in that, that subplot where Luke and, Claire, who has the superhero power of delivering the pep talk, the right pep talk at the right time, just go to Georgia or whatever, to, you know, figure out more about it. It just slows everything down. And I think that's part of the reason why I didn't really enjoy season two or the second half of season one as much. But
I think that the Netflix shows have a way of doing that, though, don't they? Of just slowing things down for one episode and maybe doing a flashback. My favourite episode of season one of Daredevil, and probably of all of the Netflix shows, is the Kingpin-focused episode. I think it's like episode 7 or 8 in the first season of Daredevil. And those episodes can really work. I think the reason that that episode with Misty didn't work in this, and I was so surprised that it didn't because I loved that character. I think she might be my favourite character in the show. I just didn't buy her emotional state at that point. I didn't buy that that was the thing that would have flipped her to that point, just losing her gun to Diamondback. It felt like we'd already seen her go through just as much stuff, and it also didn't feel like the straw that broke the camel's back either. I was just watching this episode going, I mean, I really like this character, but I'm not buying this.
But, yeah, I agree that that moment where she lost the gun was sort of odd, but I guess it just depends on sort of what you want from these shows. Because I actually am not, I'm not a person who cares a ton about plot. I'm really like character driven in what I watch. So I sort of didn't mind that this show was, even in the first half, or especially in the first half, I didn't mind that it was so slowly paced and that there's really, like, not a ton of action in it, and a lot of it is just character scenes. I kind of liked that about it, and I think that early on I sort of decided that this was less Luke Cage's show than sort of, like, this version of Harlem's show. So I think once I started thinking about it as an ensemble show, it bothered me less when it's sort of like, here's a Misty subplot that's not fully tied in, and here's, you know, a Claire storyline that's not fully tied in. I sort of just watched it as this like Harlem centric ensemble drama, and sort of, which isn't, you know, admittedly, that's not what it's sold as. It's sold as a Luke Cage superhero show. So I understand why that's like a difficult thing for some people to like get on board with. But for me, I sort of didn't mind the more character based Harlem drama stuff.
I think for me, it would just, it would have just been nice if those character based things were the interesting characters seemed like they had crossover between them. Like, by the end of the season, it felt like Mariah and Luke hadn't shared a scene in 10, 11 episodes. And that really, that they weren't that concerned with each other. And when they all did come into that room at the start of the 13th episode, which, by the way, follows... we go straight into a flashback at the start of that episode, which is like, oh, hey, this is some context between these two characters and what they were like when they were growing up, and now they're going to fight. It's like, really? You're showing me that just before they're about to fight? Like, yeah. Is that not information that you should have imparted on me earlier in the season? Or should you have maybe sold this relationship a bit better earlier in the season? And yeah, I think that was the issue for me, was that as much as I like the characters, that the relationships between them were non-existent. And I wanted my interesting characters together. And that's not something that I really feel like Daredevil and Jessica Jones have had as much of a problem with. But yeah, that could just be me being miserable about this show. But I could try and flip this and talk about some of the stuff that I did like. And like I say, it comes down to kind of like individual little elements. So many of the cast members I liked. But Amon, do you want to talk about the music? Because the music running through this and kind of culminating in that Method Man track is... fantastic. From the trailer onwards, I would say, with Wu-Tang Clan in the first trailer, all the way to Method Man in the final episode of the series, they get the music so spot on.
Yep, they do. I mean, even the needle drops are fantastic. Another reason why episode 5 is my favorite, I love the Long Live the Chief song by Jidenna to start the episode. And the way that they sort of have that playing and then mix that in with the footage to start the episode with Cottonmouth watching the performance in his club is fantastic. And they get the needle drops so right. But yeah, I mean, literally, you could just say Luke Cage is worth it for having Method Man be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and just leave it at that, really. You know, I've listened to that track a number of times now. It's a really great scene, a really powerful moment in the series. Just having that montage of black people in bulletproof hoodies while that track is playing was really, really quite something to see.
I wanted the whole show to be. I wanted the whole show to be that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, the score itself as well by I think Ali Shaheed Muhammad and another person which I'm forgetting, that's shameful, is also really great and, you know, really well embedded into the show.
Yeah, I was just trying to Google it for you to, Adrian Young.
Thank you very much. Name.
Yeah. And I really liked as well the nightclub, which, I mean, I think the show maybe was, could have done with like one or two more sets. Like, it felt like we were going back to Mariah's house a little more often than we should have done.
She really needs better locks, by the way.
Yeah.
My gosh.
I really, really liked the club.
Yeah, no, the club is really, it's a really cool setting. Really cool setting.
It's nice as a setting. It's a good way to kind of have all those characters have a place to cross over in that first episode, where, you know, you've got the meeting upstairs and you've got Misty coming in undercover and you've got Luke working as the dishwasher. But then as an excuse to play live music from, I'll be honest, I'm very, very white and I didn't know an awful lot of this music before it started. But
it's okay, Joe, I've forgiven you.
For me, it was more a case of, after an episode, Googling who the acts were on stage rather than recognising them or anything like that. But I loved that the music was woven into it like that. And it also, It was also a nice grace note, because the more you get to know Cottonmouth and the more you find out about his love of music, and you kind of, it makes sense that although he is a criminal, that his base of operations would be this nightclub in Harlem, where he can kind of indulge in his actual passion at the same time as going around doing the crime lord kind of stuff. So yeah, I thought all of that was great. And again, I think I don't know why the show was so intent on losing Cottonmouth for Diamondback. It feels like you could have done a full season with Cottonmouth still around and slowly showing Mariah loosen his grip and get a better grip herself.
He's so good. I thought Cottonmouth was one of the best. I mean, I guess these Netflix villains are always great, but I thought he was so good and he was so different than, like, at first I was like, oh, he feels like a Kingpin knockoff, but then, like, very quickly he became his own thing that I just found so compelling.
I think the reason he feels like a Kingpin knockoff is because kind of one of the first big introductory scenes or big flashy scenes they give him is beating a guy to death with his bare hands.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did with Kingpin. And this is a show, I think I mentioned this on a previous episode of the podcast where we briefly discussed the Netflix shows. It does feel like they've got boxes to tick in. I mean, the Marvel Studios movies have a template that they kind of work around, but it almost feels like the Netflix shows have kind of like scenes that they have to hit. And so there has to now be a hallway fight, and there has to be some horrible display of violence from the villain in the first three or four episodes. And I struggled, I think, with the first three because I was starting to see, like, I've seen that three times already. This is the fourth time I've seen it. I don't need to see it again. And so I think it took me a little bit of time to warm to Cottonmouth, because you're right, he feels like once you get to know that character. And I think on a second watch, you would find that character even more rich by knowing the stuff that you know about his backstory in the first couple of episodes. But it took me time to, yeah, appreciate the character and appreciate the performance, because it felt like something I'd seen before, even though it probably wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a certain sort of kindness to him. Like, he has a temper and he can sort of lash out at people, but there's also times, like, especially with Shades, where Cottonmouth will sort of, like, admit that he's wrong or just be, like a chill dude. And that's, like, a really... That was interesting to me, because I think Kingpin would go from being, like, having this temper to sort of being very shy and awkward, but Cottonmouth just feels like a guy... Like, he feels like a guy who got sort of trapped in the system and trapped as this Kingpin and didn't really want to do it and is sort of maybe genuinely... Like, there is some genuine kindness in him. And I really liked the way they let that come out. And he felt like a big... He kind of felt like a teenager to me. And, like, the way he would sort of, like... Like, when they first watched the Judas Bullet in, like, a YouTube video of someone exploding. And the way he sort of, like, laughs in response to that was just so much to me. How, like, you know, you're watching dumb YouTube videos with your friends. And you sort of, like, laugh at ridiculous things or over-the-top things. Like, there, I don't know. There was a lot of vulnerability there that I found so compelling. And then I think that that's, none of that is there in Diamondback. Like, he's just a totally one note over the top villain. And so it's, you just don't care about him in the same way at all.
And it's a weird way to go with that character when your thing that you're going to reveal about him is he's the half brother of Luke, who is driven by, kind of familial jealousy. It's a weird way to try and to choose to depict that character when that's what you're going to reveal is his motivation. Because, I don't know, I never bought them as brothers. I never bought that backstory. I just, nah, he's a nutter. He's probably made it up.
it's just far too quickly done. It's a shame, because I could see it working if, you know, it was a slow burn, if they spent more time on it and sort of revealed it step by step. But they revealed that, like, literally, in the episode where Diamondback is introduced, Diamondback reveals that they are brothers. And that just sort of came really out of left field and was very jarring.
Well, he just kind of says it, doesn't it? It doesn't it? Well, I think it takes him a while to even say that he is Diamondback, which is weird because... Mm. We've been having Diamondback kind of referred to during the first half of the show. And then he turns up as just this guy shooting at Luke on the street. And you're like, oh, I guess he's another lackey who's been sent after him with a gun. And then he's like, I'm Diamondback, in the same way that he says, I'm Luke Cage. And then weirdly we find out he's his brother, he says, oh, I'm your brother, but you don't know whether to take it on face value or whatever, and then we go back and have to have that flashback to confirm it, which again felt like a really weird way to confirm it.
Well, the problem is that it's presented as this big twist, like, oh, this person that you thought was just your childhood best friend is actually your brother. But the problem is we find out that Luke had a childhood best friend in the same.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Episode that we find out that the childhood best friend is his brother. So it's not... it's a twist for Luke, but it's not a twist for us. We're just presented with two pieces of information. So it doesn't feel, you know, if we had known that Luke had this best friend and he had talked about him in the prison flashback and this had been a big part of the story, then it would have felt like a reveal for us too. But it just feels like, oh, okay, here's a new person. Oh, okay, he's his half-brother. Like, we didn't even know if he had any siblings. So it's just really mishandled in terms of how they present that information.
It feels like a case of not planning ahead, and I wonder whether that's a problem that a lot of these Netflix shows have. We were talking off mic about some Defenders speculation, and you were saying, Caroline, you were like, I don't think they were thinking about that way back then. I don't think they were thinking about the Defenders in Daredevil Season 2, which is fair, because you kind of feel like that they have the same problem within the show. Like, there was rumours that I think Iron Fist at one point was going to be coming earlier than Luke Cage, but basically Iron Fist, they were having problems with breaking the second half of the season. It's like, what does that mean? Have you not planned the full season when you're starting out? Do you not have a basic idea about character arcs and the plot and where you want to take this character and this story over the course of these 13 episodes? It feels very much the case here that it doesn't always know where it wants to take a character or what it wants to do with them. And just on a basic level, it feels like we end episodes with cliffhangers that... I don't know, all of the Netflix shows seem to have a problem with this, that a cliffhanger... We end two consecutive episodes at one point in the season with Luke Cage being shot by a Judas bullet and him falling down dead or seemingly in a lot of trouble, and how's Luke going to survive? And then the next episode just picks back up with him kind of standing up and carrying on. And like, fool me once. And there's also that weird stuff with the kind of like the flashback kind of... They do some weird stuff with like putting the start of episodes... the end of episodes at the start of I think it's like episode 2-3 that they play around with the timeline when Luke is going to storm that building and having the kid holding the gun to his head.
Yeah, I liked that one though. I thought that I agree with the other like pacing problems, but I thought that one was pretty cool.
I just agreed. Didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. That might have been the problem.
that leads me to sort of bring up something we haven't really discussed yet, but the action in Luke Cage, I thought, is mostly well done. Of course, the hallway fight is really, really cool, with Bring the Rockets as the soundtrack as well. But I just love, I'll never get tired of Luke Cage just nonchalantly smacking the dude. Just smacking through the costume. I think that's really, really cool. And it was really, well acted as well by Mike Colter.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually thought, so there's not a lot of action for sure, but what impressed me so much is that they found a very different way. I think there's a lot of like super strong superheroes, right? That's like the most basic power you can have. So I feel like I've seen so many things, you know, Superman and Supergirl and Captain America and even like Iron Man. Like, okay, they all sort of punch people, but this show chose to make Luke like super passive in his action scenes, and he's really more about defense than he is offense, which I thought was so compelling to watch. So it's not even that he'll kind of bat someone out of the way if they're really right in his face, but for the most part, he can just like go about his business, walk on down that hallway. Doesn't really matter if he's getting shot or not. And he's not like running and charging at people. And I thought that I've just found that so compelling to watch, particularly because I've seen so many superhero things, and for this to find a completely different like visual vocabulary for the powers, I just thought that was so cool. So even though there wasn't a ton of action, I found the stuff that they did have really compelling.
See, I thought that works a lot better in the kind of low-key action stuff. The kind of the times where we're building up to a big like action sequence, like the final fight with Diamondback, I didn't think worked. And weirdly, this show's corridor sequence. I was sat on the sofa watching this with my other half, and I was like, "Oh, this is going to be awesome!" He's about to go into the building, and then I kind of watched it. Was like, "Yeah, it was okay." And I wonder whether that might be fatigue of the like corridor fights from the other shows. But I kind of preferred the low key moments where he is just like with the two kids who are pointing their guns at Method Man in the store. That's the kind of stuff that I really liked, and the kind of the interaction it works because he is a reluctant hero, but also because he has like it's almost so easy for him that. The fighting isn't a concern. He's a bulletproof guy who's super strong. It's like, I don't want to do this. I'll do it if I have to. All of that stuff was great.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the Defenders, because at least in the comics, the hand, the ninjas, they can't feel anything. Or they're like already half dead, so he can cut loose. But I really enjoyed that. And yeah, to your earlier point, just when you're talking about Luke interacting with the locals, that's why I think episode 5 is my favorite, because it's just, you know, at the start of the episode, you've got people coming to him sort of in trouble because Cottonmouth people are sort of coming down on the Harlem townsfolk, and they come to him with their problems, and he's just, obviously he just got the new suit for the funeral as well, so he's just striding about Harlem, taking care of business, and I had a massive smile on my face. When he was doing all of that, it was great.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think that for me, the strongest stretch of the show is episodes 4 through 7. And every time you mention something that happened in episode 5, I'm like, actually, that was really great. And that you get the two of them kind of, well, you get Cottonmouth grandstanding at the funeral, and then Luke kind of just delivering it straight, and you kind of see these two different approaches to trying to win the hearts and minds of Harlem, and that weaves quite nicely together with Mariah's political campaign at that point of the show, which is still active. I don't think the show does really recover. But Amon, you mentioned Defenders, and I did want to talk about some of the little crossover bits and pieces in the show. And we can talk about some of the stuff that we liked or disliked in terms of its crossovers with the other Marvel shows here. But what I wanted to ask you was how you both felt about the way that this interacts with Jessica Jones. Because I really liked the Reva stuff, I mentioned that already, but it almost felt to me like that this should have been the show before Jessica Jones, and that we should have got Luke Cage first, and then kind of after everything, all the shit goes down in Harlem, he kind of slinks off to Hell's Kitchen for a while and meets Jessica. Because it felt weird to me that relationship, which felt so vibrant and crucial throughout all of Jessica Jones, that Jessica sat in Harlem and in Hell's Kitchen and presumably seeing all this stuff on TV and going, not interesting.
Yeah, but that would be very Jessica, I feel like.
She's busy drinking, man. Scene. How good would it have been to have got that scene, just Jessica watching it and going,
oh yeah, that would have been good. It didn't really bother me. I think I've made peace with the idea that these Marvel things, like, you're not going to get Iron Man except for Civil War, but for the most part, you're not going to get Iron Man showing up in a Captain America movie. Like, they're sort of their own separate things. I get why this one doesn't want to delve into the sort of exact dynamics of the Jessica relationship. I don't think that particularly bothered me. The thing that was the most exciting to me was how much Claire is in this season. Because I just think, I was actually just thinking this the other day, I think Claire Temple might be one of the best female characters on TV right now. I just think that she's so realistic and grounded and sort of unlike the way I think women in superhero movies are, like, they're either the damsel in distress, or they're the like flirty, hyper competent black widow, like I'm sexy and I can kill you thing. And Claire just feels like a human being, and that seems so rare. So I loved getting to spend so much time with her. I thought she was so well used here, and that was probably the most exciting crossover for me.
And she's super self-driven as well, isn't she? Like, her arc through this series is, we get the like offhand reference to what happened in Daredevil, and then she's going, but I think this is what I want to do. And she goes out and she does it. And so she is kind of like the proactive superhero almost in a way, while Luke is the one who's a little bit unsure of what to do.
Yeah.
And she gets heroic moments of her own, which is pretty cool for a character who's not powered like the people around her are. Yeah, you're right, Caroline, the way that she just does feel like a normal person in this universe. And I think it was a really smart move, considering you've got Rosario Dawson, who is a fantastic actress in the first place, to just go, yeah, let's kind of use her for a total of 13 episodes across these, you know, 4 or 5 series of show before we get to Defenders. And it'll be really cool seeing her kind of introducing them to each other. Because, you know, at the end where she's like, oh, I know a really good lawyer. And you're like, yes, I want to see that courtroom scene. I want that to be the first episode of the Defenders. A courtroom scene where Matt Murdock is defending Luke Cage. And Jessica's sat in the dock watching, and yeah, and then I guess Iron Fist will come along at some point as well.
I completely agree with everything both of you guys just said. +100 on that, on those comments. The only sort of annoyance I had with Claire is that they've made her a love interest again, and I would have rather Luke and Claire just remain friends. Personally, but everything else with Claire, I thought was fantastic. I thought Rosario Dawson did a fantastic job. And as I say, to have three black female characters at that who are this well drawn, I mean, I think that's more than the entire rest of the MCU combined. That's a major win for Luke Cage. I think that's probably the best thing about the show.
I agree with what you said about her as a love interest and that being slightly disappointing. But what I did like was one of the kind of character beats of, or the characteristics of Luke Cage just being, he flirts with everyone.
Like, he does flirt with everyone.
Yeah.
He wants to get that coffee.
With this cheeky little glint in his eye. It's not kind of lecherous in any way. It's just kind of, well, let's see what happens.
Feel like by existing, my culture is just flirting with everyone.
Like the man said, if you got it, you got it.
And like Caroline said, I just wanted him to hug me.
Yeah.
sorry, I cut you off there, Caroline. What were you about to say?
No, you're fine. Like you guys, I wasn't I wasn't against it, but I wasn't totally on board with the Luke-Claire relationship. But somebody in the AV Club comments actually was pointing out sort of how rarely you have women of color in sort of any... really in anything, but particularly in like action or superhero things. And then B, how infrequently they get to be the love interest in those things. Like we think of, oh, women are always just the love interest, but actually that's not the case with like black or Hispanic women. So through that lens, it actually is kind of progressive to make her the love interest. So I don't know. I thought that was a really good thing that one of those commenters brought up. And building on what Aman said, like when you look at the MCU, I'm pretty sure that the only women of color in the entire, like, film universe, you have Gamora, Zoe Saldana, and you have Helen Cho, who's a scientist in, who's green. Yeah. Helen Cho, who's a scientist in Age of Ultron, and then you have one of Black Panther's female bodyguards who's on screen for, like, 10 seconds. Yeah. And I think that's the entire movie. I think that it's... Yeah, she does. But I'm pretty sure that those are the only three women of color in all like 13 films, which is insane when you think about it. Like we always say like, oh, there's not enough women in these movies, but like there's certainly not enough women of color. So yeah, I totally agree that having this many awesome female characters and specifically black female characters is like so worthy of praise. Like there's definitely a version of Luke Cage that doesn't do that. And that the show paid that much attention to it, I think is deserves so much kudos for that.
And I do wonder whether the Luke-Claire relationship exists maybe because comics, because We kind of know that Matt Murdock and Karen is a kind of thing from the comics, although she's going to be turning up in The Punisher now, so I wonder whether that's going to be a pivot there, because I think I'd been kind of rooting for, without realizing it, for Matt and Claire more than I'd ever been rooting for Matt and Karen. Mm-hmm. Misty, I think, becomes the other half of Iron Fist in the comics. And I think I was just surprised because so much with Claire, because Luke and Jessica have been an item and have a kid together in the comics over the past 5 or 10 years. And given how good they were together, it was... it was a surprise that they went in that direction. And I wonder whether that might be the slight residual disappointment in terms of making Claire the love interest as well. It's like, I was shipping you all in other directions. I have the same thing on the Flarrowverse shows. I'm just like, I don't care. Like, Iris, I have grown to really like, but I would kind of like... Barry to be with Felicity, and then that would get Felicity out of Arrow, and it would fix a whole bunch of things with that show, those shows.
But maybe Felicity that's makes
so this is why you have to start writing fan fiction. You can make all of your dreams come true.
Yeah. I mean, they're writing me a musical episode of Flash and Supergirl. So
I would read your fanfic, Joe. I would read that quick. Now, I was just going to say, following up on sort of an earlier point, it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, Iron Fist, it needs something to hook me. Because after Jessica Jones, I mean, got Jessica Jones, it's a superhero show, but it's a lot about sort of, PTSD and rape culture, and it does all those things very well. Then you got Luke Cage, which is, very unapologetically black, it gives you that black experience, which you don't really see, on this level, that, it was something very unique. Then you got Iron Fist, and just nothing which I've seen from the trailers or anything is really hooking me in. And when you have sort of, the great emphasis on female characters you have in Jessica Jones, the great emphasis on black characters you have in Luke Cage, and then you think of sort of the missed opportunities with casting and Iron Fist,
maybe it's going to be a meta commentary on whitewashing.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That sounds interesting.
We do have in that show, we saw Claire Temple picking up the flyer at the end, which was for, what's her name? Colleen Wing's martial arts class. She's going to be played by Jessica Henrich, who's been one of the Sand Snakes on Game of Thrones, so hopefully she'll be freed from that terrible role. And she also briefly showed up on Star Wars The Force Awakens. She will be on Iron Fist, which I think is one of the things to look forward to, because she, in the comics, I think as well, has a bit of a partnership with Misty Knight. Those two kind of... hook up at kind of like the female version of Luke Cage and Iron Fist's Heroes for Hire.
Are they part of the sort of the Daughters of the Dragon?
Yes, I think that sounds right. Yeah. I don't know an awful lot about it, but from my brief amount of Googling, that sounds like that's the thing.
Yeah.
and obviously, so that means that Claire's going to be over there in that show as well. But yeah, you're right. It's at the moment, it's still a very tough sell for me. And one of the things that I found insane about this was, I think it was maybe at New York Comic Con or one of the recent conventions, and there was a picture with all of the Defenders characters together. They like took a selfie together. And Mike Coulter said something like, "Oh, and this was the first time that I met Finn Jones, so that was really cool." And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You've got these two characters who are surely going to be sharing an incredible amount of screen time together in first The Defenders and then probably series two of their solo shows. Because Mike Coulter has also said Heroes for Hire is something that's in the future for these characters. How have they not had screen tests and chemistry tests before they cast Finn Jones?
Want
your Iron Fist actor to be really good on screen with Mike Coulter?
You think, but I mean, from what I've read of how Netflix are casting these things, that doesn't really surprise me, because I know that Chiyohodari Koka, the showrunner for Luke Cage, he didn't have any say in the casting of Mike Coulter.
Well, yeah, I guess that was a Jessica Jones.
That was a Jessica Jones thing. So, and I'm sure sort of, he didn't have any input in sort of, you know, how, you know, Luke Cage and Iron Fist would sort of interact with each other when they were casting Iron Fist. So that doesn't really surprise me, although I do agree with you then, you know, it would have been better if they had met each other and had screen test and figured all that out before, casting, and then maybe we would have got a different casting as well for Iron Fist, because I can't remember the name of the dude who's playing the villain, but I've read that Marvel were thinking of actually casting an Asian Iron Fist, and then they got cold feet and then went with Game of Thrones dude. But yeah, as I say, I will watch it because I'm a massive fan of superheroes and everything else, but there's nothing really getting me pumped for Iron Fist right now, but we shall see.
Caroline, what about you? Because you are going to be sitting down and watching them over a weekend.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see if I can handle it. I've literally just been shaking my head this whole, listening to you guys this whole conversation, because Iron Fist just feels like the least essential thing that has ever existed. Like, why, we already have Daredevil. Like, why do we need Iron Fist?
And
what is this bringing? Mm. Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I actually made a joking poll about this recently, like, which is least essential, Doctor Strange or
Iron Fist? I voted in that poll.
Because it feels like, good. What'd you vote for?
I think I voted for Iron Fist.
Yeah, I was like slightly with Doctor Strange. It just feels like, so Marvel has been criticized for the lack of diversity thing since this thing started in 2008, right? So that's, you have 8 years to sort of get your stuff together, figure out what you're doing. And the fact that they are still producing, I mean, yes, like to their credit, they have Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and at some point Black Panther and Captain Marvel, but that they're prioritizing, it's not just that they're building on their existing franchises, right? It's not like they're like, okay, Thor's an existing character, we're going to keep making Thor movies. That I understand. But they're like, they keep introducing new characters who are just white guys, right? Like, you have Ant-Man, you have Doctor Strange, you have Iron Fist. Like, it just feels like such a slap in the face when they sort of pretend to care about these things and then clearly through their actions they don't.
Yeah.
And so I just have a really hard time. Like, Iron Fist, I think, has just come to represent in my mind, like, everything wrong with Marvel, which isn't the best way to, like, the best lens through which to judge a TV show. But it's certainly, I will say, to be somewhat optimistic, I will just say that it has an uphill battle to win me over. Just leave it at that.
I think there were extenuating circumstances between behind some of the characters who have been introduced. So Ant-Man was a film that they'd been making for 10 years and then kind of had got too far along the line to jump ship by the time that Edgar Wright went away, because it was basically an Edgar Wright passion project. And I think by the time you see Doctor Strange, you will probably see it. The character maybe doesn't feel hugely essential, but the stuff that it does to the Marvel universe probably is key in the direction that they want to go.
But couldn't they have done that with someone that didn't look like Benedict Cumberbatch in the essential role?
Exactly.
He's very good in the film.
The problem is, you can kind of explain this stuff away on a kind of micro level, but when you take a step back at things and look at them on a macro level, it doesn't start to look good, does it? You know, when you're pushing back your Captain Marvel movie and, you know, even DC, whose movies don't look great, they've, you know, you look at that Justice League stood on a screen together and you go, that immediately looks better than, in terms of representation, than what Marvel have done. You would think the last thing that these Marvel shows need, especially after they went and did the Punisher and greenlit a Punisher show so quickly, was to add Iron Fist to that Defenders team. That, or certainly a white, blonde Iron Fist to that Defenders team.
One thing I will say, I know that sort of we're ragging on Marvel right now, but Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that show is very diverse. And
that's a good point, and it often gets forgotten, too.
And
even by me.
And it's actually really, really good right now. The introduction of Ghost Rider has, you know, I'd highly recommend it. And Robbie Ray, Gabriel Luna is playing the, I think he's Mexican. The Mexican Ghost Rider, Robbie Reyes, is really, really good. And obviously you got Ming-Na Wen, you got, Chloe Bennett as Daisy. You have Mac in there as well. So yeah, that show is really good when it comes to diversity.
I think that can be the problem with a lot of this still, though, isn't it? It's that, you know, we've just talked about a show that is majority black characters, and, you know, we've talked about how, you know, certain other parts of the Marvel Universe have had good representation at a lower level. But it's not what they're selling these on. And that was what was refreshing about Jessica Jones, is it was just a female lead of a superhero show. And this was, Luke Cage was a black lead of a superhero show. It feels like too often that these Marvel shows, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is being sold, or certainly was to begin with, on Clark Gregg, a 45-year-old white guy, you know? I mean, and I don't think it is fair to just rag on Marvel, because this is kind of like, I'm sure if you go across like all of the blockbusters that were released this summer.
Cough, cough, Ghost in the Shell, The Great Wall.
Yeah.
The Great Wall in particular.
I don't mind ragging on Marvel, though.
I love Marvel, but yeah, they do need to...
It just seemed like such an easy way out with this. Rewrite Iron Fist as an Asian character. And it would be such a more interesting show within this universe, even. Just on that level of an Asian guy coming to New York with these powers. And we get to look at the rest of this universe that they've established in Hell's Kitchen in Harlem through the eyes of an outsider.
Or just make it an Asian American character, and you don't need to rewrite a single word. Like, literally just cast an Asian American and have him do everything that Finn Jones is going to do. And I don't think it would necessarily, you know, you wouldn't need to change anything then. Yeah, that's a free idea for you, Marvel.
it's a massive missed opportunity. And it just means that we're going to get more Asian sort of stereotypes who are going to be the villains and ninjas and it's disappointing. It's just more frustrating because it was right there in front of them, and they just,
and that they'd done so well leading up to this,
and it's not like Asian American, it's not like Marvel have a large sort of roster of Asian American characters. Iron Fist is probably their most high profile one, which they could have sort of redone here, and they just completely missed it. Which is a massive shame.
To take all of this back to Luke Cage, though, I mean, for all of my problems with the show and for all of the difficulty that I did have kind of watching 13 episodes in a couple of weeks, I'm still glad this show exists for the opposite of all the reasons we just said about Iron Fist, because it's important that this show exists, and it's great that Mike Coulter is the lead of a Netflix superhero series, and that the show is dealing with black iconography and race issues surrounding race in 21st century America and all of that kind of stuff, and exploring little pockets of black culture. And you know that I can be watching this show as a white guy from the north of England and be going, oh, her, who's that music act? Or what does that phrase mean? And it's just... It makes it normal, and it makes it, the fact that a show like this exists makes it possible for, you know, it to, next time it doesn't have to seem like a big deal, you would hope. Because however much we are getting small pushes in the direction of diversity at the moment, it still does feel like this is the black superhero show, and Black Panther is the black superhero movie, and Captain Marvel is the female superhero movie. So we need more of it, but this is, I think this is a very important first step, because everything that it fumbles in terms of plotting as it goes along, it kind of achieves all of the stuff that I just said it was able to do, because they get that lead character right, and I think because they marketed the show very well as well. Sometimes that's important. Mm-hmm. And that first trailer was absolutely killer. And introducing Luke Cage through Jessica Jones was a good idea as well.
It was.
And I think the first half of this season is really good. Like, it's worth saying that as much as we're ragging on all the... Like, I feel like all of our complaints are things that happen in the second half. Like, if you were to just watch the first, like, five or six of these, like, that's a great first, and in my opinion at least, like a first five or six episodes, I really, really enjoyed those. So there are definitely weaknesses in the second half, but I don't want to let those like outweigh the things that work so well in the beginning, particularly.
Mm. Absolutely.
And I hope the show course corrects and goes and looks at a season two and says, Diamondback wasn't very successful. Let's ignore that hanging thread that we had at the end. And let's just have a, let's have a season where it is Mariah and Luke and see how that plays off in this community and dig deeper into some of the issues that we explored in the first half of this show. And let's resurrect Cottonmouth just because it's a superhero show. they've got that coffin thing, so they can.
I repeat, yeah. I will read your fanfic, Joseph.
They brought Electra back. They can bring Cottonmouth back. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I feel like I always take for granted with these Netflix shows, they are beautiful. Like, the cinematography is stunning. I will take a lot of screen caps when I write my reviews, and I swear, like, every time I pause my computer, it looks like a painting. Like, and I find that I just sort of like, oh, yeah, they look nice, but... I mean, compared to something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I don't think has this attention at all to sort of the cinematography and the look of the show, I just think all of these are so beautiful. And Luke Cage in particular, I think Jessica Jones and Daredevil, like, they're very dark and they're sort of like rich but like cool tones. So like a lot of like blood reds and blues and stuff, whereas Luke Cage is super warm and like warm teals and yellows, and it feels very saturated. So it looks different than Jessica Jones and Daredevil, but it still has that same like gorgeous attention to cinematography. And you think about like the very on the nose but I think cool framing of Cottonmouth, sort of with the Biggie portrait behind him and the crown, so it looks like it's on his head, like just things like that, as sort of unsubtle as they are, I think are just really stunning to look at.
Yeah, the color palettes of these shows, when you think of Daredevil, you think of blacks and reds, don't you? And when you think of Jessica Jones, you're thinking of purples and whites and blues, I think. Mm-hmm. And when you're thinking of this, you're thinking of yellows and oranges and, yeah, teals and those kind of... it's effective. I think you're right. It's something that I think all of the network TV superhero shows don't have that same that same artistry on that regard.
I have one more thing to mention, and like I said off air, I almost forgot, but there's a really cool cameo by Trish on Luke Cage, which is really awesome. There's a Trish talk. Can't remember what episode it's in, but it was really fun to hear her voice again. I'm looking forward to seeing her in The Defenders, hopefully in a Hellcat costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like Trish. I think I was very positive on her in Jessica Jones, wasn't I, Caroline? I can't remember.
I don't remember. Probably. She's the best.
She reminds me of Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl, and that can only be a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Those really are the little cameos that I want more of, too. Like, you know, I understand that there's contracts and stuff, but it is the sort of thing where you're like, oh, you just want Foggy to like be walking through the police department when something's happening, or this is on the radio. Like, if in a perfect world, we could just have a million of those. And I thought they used Trish so well here.
Anytime Claire said my lawyer friend, I'm like, please get Matt Murdock on Luke Cage. Oh yeah. My goodness. Anytime she said it, I was just like, just do it. Just do it. Like,
they didn't. That's great. The references across the Marvel Netflix shows to the Marvel movies, though, not good. There's only so many times you can call him the guy with the hammer or the big green guy. Are you actually not allowed to use the superhero names? What's that about? I've got footage of the incident. The incident. Yeah, we get it.
I did like that guy's plan to film Luke Cage doing things and then sell the DVDs, though, because he said 4K for 4K, and I thought that was a really funny way to put it. I quite enjoyed that.
He's like a modern-day Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay, well, is there anything else that you guys wanted to mention about the show before we wrap things up, or... anything that you want to see from these characters across Iron Fist and The Defenders, both of which I think we'll probably be getting next year?
# bring Method Man back.
Yeah. They should just have Method Man rap about all of the individual Defenders.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
He should just be their like official hype man. I will just say the cast just across the board is amazing. Like, I thought Frankie Faison as Pop was awesome. Mm. I loved the Bobby Fischer guy. I thought, if anything, the show could use more humor, and he was always a good source of, like, a little bit of comic relief. Also, Alfrey Woodard should just be in literally everything, because I think she's the best. And Shades, too, who we didn't talk about. I thought just across the board, like, there were really, really solid performances from probably everyone but Diamondback. Is the running
Shades
theme here, but
really irritating in the first half of the season. He was one of the elements of the second half that I did like. I was so into the Shades Mariah relationship.
Me too.
In a way that I didn't know that I was until it happened. But I liked that so much more than him kind of, because he didn't really feel like he had a reason for being there early on. Felt like just a completely useless character, and then I did kind of like him towards more and more towards the end.
I will second you, Caroline, on Frankie Faison on as Pops. He makes a lot of clunky dialogue sound very authentic and genuine, mm-hmm. and just it brings a lot of warmth and dignity to that role, which really he's only in it for a couple episodes, but when he dies, it really does hit. Because of that relationship between him and Luke Cage, and that's really well established by Frankie.
Yeah,
and I'm just trying to think if there was anyone else that I particularly liked that we haven't mentioned. I quite liked Scarf.
I did not like him.
I liked him, but I also felt like I'd seen that character three times already in the Marvel shows. So that was an issue. And again, Reva, I wanna see more of that. That was the backstory of Luke that I wanted more of.
Yeah.
Less of the what happens when you put more acid on his skin.
You know who I love is Turk.
Oh, that was
who was in. He's been in like a couple Daredevil like little cameos, and he gets a little more to do here. I think he's so like I really liked him in Daredevil, and so to see him pop up again, I was so excited.
And his little things about it's not as crazy as this over in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty great.
Okay, well, I think that brings our Luke Cage discussion to an end. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. Who wants to go first with plugging your work on the internet, your Twitter accounts, and assorted internet goodness?
Ladies first.
I'll go. You can find me. I'm at Caroline Sita on Twitter. That's probably the best place to find me. Otherwise, you can, like Joe said, you can find my stuff at the AV Club. And just elsewhere. I'm always lurking somewhere on the internet.
I'm on Twitter at AWarman. And you can find my stuff on YouTube. My channel name is Amonymous. And I also have a website, AmonymousBlog.com.
And I believe you've also got a Luke Cage recommendation. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I've read the Luke Cage in comics, in Avengers comics before, but I've also come across him in an animated cartoon, because obviously my recommendation is an animated thing. You should know this by now, Joe. There's a cartoon called Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which was unfortunately cancelled after two seasons because it was pretty great. But Luke Cage and Iron Fist, Heroes for Hire, actually appear in a couple of episodes, and they're very, very, very great. I cannot remember which ones off the top of my head, but it's in season 2. I'm guessing, I think it's like episode 21. But yeah, they both of those heroes appear, and they're a lot of fun. So I'd seek them out.
Excellent. Okay, I'll have a look for that. I think, was that on Netflix at some point, that show?
I think it's on Netflix right now. It's either on Netflix or Amazon, one of those things. But yeah, seek it out. It's a lot of fun. It's only 20 minutes too.
And I'm just looking that Luke Cage and Iron Fist look like they appear in the episodes, episode 5 of season 2, which is called To Steal an Ant-Man.
Oh yeah, that's the one.
Luke Cage also pops up in the episode entitled New Avengers, which is episode 23 of season 2.
Damn it.
There we go. Well, fantastic. Thanks for that, Amon. And thanks to you both for joining us for this bonus episode. I'm not going to do the usual spiel because this is a bonus episode and you don't want to hear it. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.